Tell me, doctor, babies can't be all that different. So how is it that infancy leads to such different results in adults? How is it that some people have mind problems and end up in straitjackets while others appear to be normal?
Think of this, Adolf. Two boys, born the same day, at the same time in the same hospital. They also share a common flaw passed on to them by their grandfathers, who were both keen anglers. The grandfathers leave their grandsons their angling thigh boots. Each grandfather's right boot has a hole in it. And when they grow up, one grandson becomes a keen angler and wears the boot. Thus, he eventually suffers rheumatism in his leg. The other boy loves archaeology and spends his life in the dry desert. And though he wears the boot, he suffers no ill effect to his leg. So common flaws in infancy don't necessarily lead to similar problems later in life.
Yeah, obviously, both grandfathers were Jews, giving their grandsons defective goods. The man suffering rheumatism was also Jewish, being foolish enough to wear the faulty boot. The other had a solid Aryan parent who knew better.
When later in conversation with Bernheim I recounted this episode, his silence and apathy confirmed my belief in his own Nazi sympathies. He later told me that I was on a dangerous ground when I said that Hitler's profound anti-Semitic rhetoric was a psychotic trait. The following day, my special patient kept his appointment as arranged to receive my report. Take a seat.
Hi, Doc. This thing is boiling over. We need to know what you know. Lives will depend on it.
I've prepared a summarized patient's profile. It's here. But I'll give you the extended version verbally as an added introduction to the subject.
Good. You keep this up. I'm going to take you out to dinner.
Might be a bit inappropriate, considering our man is now age 48. He had a troubled and abused childhood, as a result of which he became fixated on his mother and hated his father.
Yeah, I've heard this record before.
His childhood was solidarity without friends. He was and remains emotionally flat. He's also very immersed in ancient mythology, astrology, metaphysics, and so on and on and on. He sees his instructions coming from above.
You dare say he has a large ego?
Colossal. It gives him feelings of immense power and righteousness, of being totally invincible. It's megalomania. He's grandiose in his effect while being emotionally cold in his relationships. He's prone to tantrums and violent outbursts of temper that are in fact all for show and to intimidate his observers, especially those in opposition, while he remains calm, aloof, and in control within.
He's an actor.
He's an actor. World class, like Chaplin. No doubt he carefully rehearses every speech down to his physical movements, pauses, and it's an ever-enlarging audience.
Exactly how crazy is he?
Very, but he's not actually mad in the common perceived definition. He's a calculating, charismatic, and skilled politician and leader. In other words, a completely normal political fanatic.
When the Americans and the Brits really get into this, there are plans afoot. Do you think old Adolf ever questions himself? If he decides a thing is a certain way, would he ever reconsider?
When angered, the man is more likely to react out of a childish fury than as a seasoned military strategist. Spitefully, without much forethought.
To the point of overruling his generals.
Absolutely, and then he blamed them for the aftermath of his own bad decisions. In his estimation, he's infallible. He can never be wrong. He's a malignant narcissist. It's a very deranged attitude, One he's had almost from the cradle and he'll certainly carry to his grave.
Yeah, hopefully we can arrange that.
I'm in no position to address that comment.
His malignant narcissism makes him totally devoid of conscience.
Yeah, it's why he'll never be deterred by outcry from other governments. And how can he be when he knows that he's infallible, a messiah?
Was he born at Christmas? Jeez. What do you think he'll do next?
He certainly has huge plans for German expansion. Since 1935, he has ignored and overridden the constraints of formal treaties to satisfy them. Going forward, firstly, he'll annex Austria and then set about claiming the German-speaking Sudetenland of Czechoslovakia.
You believe so?
Of course. And by the same token, he will charm any foreign leaders opposing them with his soft and friendly mask and his persuasive, apparently logical arguments.
Honey-tongued smooth. The iron fist in a velvet glove.
Precisely, it's all part of his drive for our living space, the Lebensraum, into Central and Eastern Europe for the greater Germanic Reich. The rise and expansion of his master race policy. All opposition by races deemed to be inferior to the Aryans will be swept aside, driven before him, and annihilated.
I'll need to transmit your opinions to my superiors, Doc.
And what are they planning to do about him?
Tell you more next time, a week from now.
Tell me one more thing before you go.
What?
Your name.
Frank. An Italian-American named Frank? Go on. Yes, Frank. Ciao, Doc.
Tildy and I were having dinner at our favorite bistro. I raised my glass to toast her birthday, but I had another proposal on mind. Happy birthday, darling.
Now, for a few months, I'm a year closer to you.
Oh, you will always be close to me, you know that.
I'd love to be even more so.
Then, marry me.
Don't joke.
Who says I am?
Olaf, of course, I'd love to.
But...
it's just that I feel too inadequate to be a good wife to you. I've nearly always lived at home, but I hardly know how to cook and keep house.
Well, I don't care about any of that. We learned to cook together.
I have the folk concerts with the orchestra.
You really don't want to change your situation, do you?
It's not that. I love you with all my heart. This is hard.
Why?
I need my space to practice and rehearse and all my paraphernalia. If we live together, I'll clutter your apartment terribly.
Do you realize what you just said?
What?
Paraphernalia. It's literary, the stuff the bride brings with her upon marriage.
Really?
Perhaps that's an omen. A good one, I hope.
Huh. Maybe.
So you'll think about our future together, won't you?
Nothing would make me happier, my darling man. Just give me a little more time.
Until I get to be another year older than you again. Not long after my most recent visit from Frank, I noticed a familiar man on the metro platform. It couldn't be, but sure as hell it was. It was Obersturmfuhrer Kruntz. Older, like me, still retaining the same hard face with aggression spring-loaded in what the unsuspecting would have mistaken for a friendly smile. But the overall menacing image was perhaps softened by the fact that the man was out of his Sturmabteilung. His stormtrooper's uniform. In its place, he wore a fawn raincoat over a light brown double-breasted suit in a velour effect rabbit skin trilby. He saw me and approached. I moved along the platform edge to a more empty spot that was reasonably out of earshot from others on the platform. Kruntz held out an unlit cigarette.
Got the light?
I lit his cigarette, and a ridiculous fleeting thought of burning the man's face with a match flashed through my mind. But I threw the match down onto the line, and a frightened little mouse scurried away between the shining rails. Then Kruins inhaled deeply on a cigarette and blew out the smoke with a convincing smile etching out on his face. He directed the smile round at me in a glinting side glance.
I know you have a new friend.
Kruins couldn't resist letting out a devilish gurgle of delight. I would have liked to have pushed the man off the platform onto the electrified rails, but that would have been of no benefit to anyone. I was just another patient.
I know. Understand?
If you do, why are we having this conversation here?
You will tell me everything. All your interactions with your new friend. Until my mind and his share the same information.
Why should I do that?
Because if you don't, the Führer will know as well. And then you will no longer be his dog. You will be one more insect to crash under his boot.
You put yourself at risk as well.
No. Our fates are entwined. You will provide me information. I will tell my superiors I have a man in with our enemies. I will be rewarded. Everyone wins.
That's an optimistic interpretation of the situation.
We speak again. Two stations along. Tomorrow. Same time. I shall be needing another light of my cigarette.
Throwing his glowing cigarette onto the track, Kruins turned and made for the exit. And the little mouse came scuttling back along the track, defying death from alive rails as a blast of wind and light sliding out of the tunnel signaled that a train was fast approaching the platform. One day I was summoned by Bernheim, who said the two of us had been invited to stay with the Führer at his Bavarian retreat for the weekend. Given my last interaction with Kruins, I was half convinced that he had either been found out or folded, and I was being summoned to my own execution. Despite my protestations of inconvenience, he assured me that the invitation amounted to a summons and should not be declined. It was quite apparent that Bernheim was sympathetic to the Nazi Party doctrine and aims, whereas I was totally opposed to him and to the anti-Semitic purge that were by then escalating in Germany. The prospect of spending a weekend with the Nazi hierarchy appalled me. As on the following afternoon, we flew from Berlin to Hitler's mountain retreat, the Berghof.
Welcome, welcome to the Berghof, my little mountain retreat. This is where I'm truly at home. Isn't it beautiful? Come, let me show you around. It's mainly my own creation, you know?
While Bernheim enthused over the ostentatious arrays of classical art, interspersed with some of Hitler's own watercolors, I held my peace.
I have extensive libraries full of every known work of science and literature.
As I happened to quietly remark on Bernheim that I doubted he had included Freud's publications, Hitler must have overheard me.
What's that you said?
I said nothing of importance, mein Führer.
Ah. All this from the success of my book, Mein Kampf. Sales, you cannot imagine. Now Germany rises again and we are to become masters of the universe. I transformed a collection of old farm buildings into what you now behold. You must surely be impressed. Come. Here you see my telephone exchange system. From here, I can control the whole of Germany, commanding my generals and politicians from afar.
As Bernheim and I exchanged another quiet remark, I'll lead around it once again.
Very few people have the privilege of seeing all this.
In the afternoon, Bernheim said he needed a quiet time alone with Hitler, so I spent a while out on the terrace, admiring the mountain views all round and across the narrow valley that was accessed by a nearby footbridge with a manned guard post at either end. I suspected Bernheim was in process of administering some of his special injection medication and listening to Hitler's coercive tactics to get me into joining the party, of which I was sure himself was a member, with his party badge pinned secretly beneath his lapel, all while sipping tea and munching pastries. I was not to know until some days later just how much I had been the betrayed victim of their discussion.
See, Kyle? I trust you all slept well after enjoying Reich Minister Goebbels' stirring movie last night. This afternoon, I shall take my usual walk across the valley to the tea house. Those who wish to join me may. We leave the terrace at 2 o'clock. Herr Reich Minister Speer, I know you cannot join us as you are leaving to prepare my next light and sound rally extravaganza. Reichsführer Himmler, I am sure you will be enthralled to see into the awesome halls of Valhalla at that time.
As we walked along the wooden path towards the tea house in the afternoon sunshine, I noticed and paused at a cleared area with a bench, the view from which was directly across to the Berghof, and the guards bringing up the rear of the party hustled me onwards and rejoined the group. They obviously did not like this spot, a very suitable target for an enemy sniper rifle. When next I went to visit Tilde at the Manlieffen apartment, I was told by the concierge that they had been taken by Gestapo agents 3 nights earlier and all the belongings had been cleared out the following day. Tilde and her whole family were gone.
The Hitler File is a production of Voyage Media. The series is produced by Nat Mundell, Robert Midas, and Dan Benamor. Directed and produced by Dan Benamor. Written by Desmond Fosbury, based on the novel The Dromirek File by Brandon Rolfe. Starring Peter Stormare as Dr. Dromirek and Dennis O'Hare as Adolf Hitler. Additional cast credits available in the show notes. Edited, sound designed, and mixed by Nick Misitti. Original music by Derlis Gonzalez. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or anywhere you're listening, and subscribe now for future episodes.